Next week, Pope John Paul II will enter a hospital in Rome for what the Vatican has announced will be an operation to remove his appendix. While the Vatican says the Pope is not seriously ill, the 76-year-old pontiff has appeared fatigued and often visibly suffering. Earlier this year, he had to cancel several public appearances because of intestinal ailments. Rumors about John Paul's declining health come at the same time as a public debate within the Roman Catholic Church about his legacy and the future path of papal authority. From Rome, NPR's Silvia Poggioli reports.
The atmosphere in the Vatican press room is in keeping with the traditions of the 2,000-year-old institution. This is not a place where scoops are made, and conversations are always sotto voce, just above a whisper. Covering the Vatican, many reporters say, is not unlike covering the Soviet-era Kremlin. It's an impenetrable, walled-in society where information is culled through a process of decoding official pronouncements. Marco Politi is a veteran Vatican reporter for the Rome daily La Repubblica and has also covered the Kremlin. He's also the co-author with Carl Bernstein of the just-published papal biography, His Holiness, John Paul and the Hidden History of Our Time. Politi says that from within the Roman Curia, the papal bureaucracy that has strictly enforced John Paul's decisions, signs are emerging that this papacy is on hold.
People feel that there is a sort of stagnation. A lot of people are just waiting. A lot of people don't want to expose themselves. A lot of people don't want to come up with new ideas because everybody is waiting what will happen afterwards. We can never say when a papacy ends, but we can very well feel this twilight atmosphere.
Vatican analysts say the perception of having reached the end of an era is typical of long papacies, and a year from now, John Paul's will be the longest of this century. But Politi points out that the current wait-and-see mood within the Roman Curia is countered by an unprecedented ferment in other church circles, demanding changes in the way the church is run.
It is the first time, I would say, since Vatican Council II, that under the surface there are so many pressures to put an end to the absolutist monarchy as the Catholic Church still is.
In recent months, theologians and bishops, as well as laypeople, have become increasingly outspoken in urging changes in doctrine and in calling for radical reforms in papal authority. The former Archbishop of San Francisco, John Quinn, made headlines in Catholic publications this summer with a lecture he delivered at Oxford University. He outlined ways in which papal authority could be exercised differently so that it would be less of an obstacle to church unity. Archbishop Quinn, who has always been considered a moderate, was particularly harsh with the Roman Curia, which he said has usurped much of the bishop's powers and blocked discussion, sometimes even through intimidation, of serious issues such as contraception, the ordination of women, and priestly celibacy. Archbishop Quinn's lecture came against a backdrop of a growing movement of Austrian, German, and Swiss prelates demanding collegiality, the power-sharing arrangement envisioned by Vatican II reforms, but never enacted. Marco Politi.
This means that the bishops, especially the bishops of great Catholic countries like United States, France, Germany, but also bishops from third world countries, want to have a word to say when the Vatican issues certain documents. They don't want only to be consulted. They want to be part of the decision-making process.
Reactions to demands for reform have revealed a church that's polarized. Archbishop Quinn's lecture was severely criticized by conservatives, such as New York's Cardinal John O'Connor, who defended the way the authority of the Pope and the Roman Curia are exercised. But the steady decline in priestly ordinations and a series of scandals involving priests have further nurtured the new outspokenness. Only a few weeks ago, English primate Cardinal Basil Hume said that the celibacy rule is not part of Catholic dogma, but man-made, and could be changed tomorrow if a pope wishes it.
That's obvious. But to say it in this moment is just a sign of this fin de regime atmosphere, and just the sign that a lot of people are beginning to lobbying for a future candidate who could make these changes.
The frankness of the debate on church reforms and its airing in public is unprecedented. But Politi says that, in accordance with Vatican tradition, the campaign for the next papacy is going on behind closed doors.
The procedure is that cardinals in key position or bishops who are very influent begin to sort out which are the main issues and begin to discuss these issues in the real circle of people who decide. And when there is an agreement about the issues, then these people begin to select the possible candidates. So the real conclave after the death of the Pope is only the last stage of a very long procedure.
While Vatican tradition dictates that it's too early to name names of likely papal candidates, some analysts point out that John Paul has personally chosen 80% of the cardinals who will elect the next pope. This could ensure continuity with the ideas and philosophy of the current pope. Yet other observers cite what they call the rule of the pendulum, that a conservative papacy is often followed by a moderate one, as was the case of the reform-minded John XXIII succeeding Pius XII. For the moment, it's pure speculation, and John Paul may well fulfill his dream of leading the Church into the third millennium. However, with the Pope visibly ailing, John Paul's legacy and his centralized rule of the Church are now under open and vocal scrutiny. This is Silvia Poggioli in Rome.